speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Monday, July 15th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today we're going to take a look at the back and forth between President Trump, AOC, Ilhan Omar, etc., as the Babylon Bee summed it up. I thought very well, the satire site. Nation relieved as politicians are too busy bickering to push their terrible ideas on the country. Of course, this began with AOC and Nancy Pelosi fighting with each other. AOC calling Nancy Pelosi racist and sexist. She said she's targeting women of color for persecution. And then came back and said, oh, I didn't mean to suggest that she was racist and sexist. But of course now, as President Trump criticizes the hatred, the visceral hatred that they don't try to cover up for America, people like Ilhan Omar, people like Rashida Tlaib, others, AOC as well. Regardless of whether they're born here or not, AOC, born here, does not identify with anything that is American, and of course has no problem in acting at the border as, reacting and acting as if she's seeing something on the other side of the fence, and the media covers for it. That was eventually blown up as we got the pictures that gave us the full context. Well, I'm going to give you the full context today. But in the satire piece from Babylon Bee, one man is quoted as saying, at least they'll be distracted from ruining my life for a little bit. And then they got into a bidding war as President Trump and Ilhan Omar started firing back and forth. Trump said, if half the things people say about Omar are true, she shouldn't be in office. Then she fired back and said, if a tenth of things people say about Trump are true, he shouldn't be in office. Then he took the bidding down to 100, 1 in 100. And so on. So we're going to talk about what is being said here. And you know, there's an interesting story that was on the Drudge Report. Self-cloning super ticks are coming to suck out all of our blood. And I thought this had amazing application to the political process that's happening right now, especially on the Democrat side. You know, the old joke, polyticks, that means many. Poly means many. Ticks mean blood suckers. And that's really what you've got in Washington, D.C. This one, in particular, is an illegal immigrant. It's the Asian long-horned tick that somehow crossed the border without our permission and has latched on to cattle and completely, they get on them in such quantity, and they just latch on, and they keep sucking and sucking and sucking until they drain all of the blood out of the, they've killed five cows, one of them a bull. Actually, the latest victim was a bull in North Carolina, found dead by exsanguination, meaning over 1,000 blood plump ticks completely drained it of blood. Now, is this not an image of what's going on in the Democrat Party? And if you don't see that picture, here's the next one. One of the chief concerns about this particular illegal alien tick from Asia, chief among them, is that a single well-fed female can clone herself without a male. I mean, we're talking, this is absolutely the Democrat Party right there. they think they can clone, and probably pretty soon they will be, cloning themselves without a male. And then we had, end of the week last week, we had Bill and Hillary Clinton as the guests of Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden. Billy Joel dedicated a song, and they don't say in the story what the song was. The crowd booed Bill and Hillary. That's the key thing. But I started wondering, what could the song have been? So I started looking at Billy Joel's discography. A Matter of Trust? Would that have been it? An Innocent Man. Maybe that was going to be dedicated to Bill Clinton in light of the Epstein thing. Big Shot for her. Easy Money about the Clinton Foundation. Everybody Has a Dream. No, only the illegals. How about Just the Way You Are? That's the answer to what happened. Or She's Always a Woman. Yes, let's remind everybody that Hillary Clinton is always a woman. That is her sole qualification for office. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Monday, July 15th, year of our Lord, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to talk about the back and forth over the weekend. It's got the Democrats screaming, racist, racist. But wasn't it just a day or two before that the Democrats were screaming at each other that they were racist? As I said, for a very long time, look, racism is something that we do not want in this society. And the problem is that for their own political benefit, the Democrats have been crying wolf about racism. Anybody that opposes them on anything, you're racist, you're sexist, you're homophobic, you're xenophobic, and you've got to be silenced. You've got to be punished. You've got to be depersoned, deplatformed, all this stuff, right? They don't want to argue with anybody. They don't want to have an argument. If you oppose them on any issue, they just label you with a pejorative term. And they don't have to have any reason for that. You are hateful. And they deplatform you. They silence you. And now they're doing it to each other. It was inevitable. As I said before, you've got an inherent conflict in the different groups that the Democratic Party has constructed for itself. And that's what it's become. It's nothing but a demographic party. There's no democracy in this at all. They want to create these different groups so they can use as a path to political power. The Democrat Party has always been about crafting and using racism to achieve political power. It's just that the groups change. It's kind of like what Henry Kissinger said. We don't have any permanent allies. We only have permanent interests. Well, they only have permanent tactics. Their tactics never change. And their interests, controlling our lives, every aspect of our lives, making themselves more important, more powerful than ever before. That has always been their overriding purpose, and they never, ever change. It's just that the different, just as Henry Kissinger was saying, you know, look, our allies will change. We will work with whoever we need in order to gain more power. Oh, that's the way the Democrats are. So their racism used to be white racism, white supremacy. Now it is people of color supremacy. That's the tactic that they're using. And everybody disagrees with them. You're just racist. So you're dismissed instantly. The problem is that people see what is happening with this. The problem is that real racism is no longer going to be paid any attention to because they have become the party that cries wolf. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to show you the background of Ilhan Omar, the background of Rashida Tlaib. Are these people really disloyal to the United States? No doubt about it. So it was everybody pretty much in the country is cheering President Trump on. As Paul Joseph Watson pointed out, Ilhan Omar only has about the support of about 9% of the population. So she's a good person to pick a fight with. And I think perhaps that's the reason that President Trump did it. He wants people to move away from how he got shellacked by the judiciary. And he's not the first president. He's not the only one to do it. But he isn't going to get anything done about the border or any of the important aspects of his agenda if he doesn't take on judicial tyranny, judicial overreach. The idea that the judiciary is the supreme and final word on everything, that they're not a co-equal branch. And again, the founders didn't even see them as a co-equal branch. They saw them as the least dangerous because they didn't have a way to enforce their rules. Unless the executive and the legislative branches bow down to their demands. And that is happening at the state levels as well. This is a massive, massive usurpation of power that happened in the 20th century. Our governors, our state legislatures, our Congress, our executive have all bowed down to them. And if President Trump continues in this new tradition, which is not grounded in the Constitution, he's not going to get anything done at the border and many other things. We're going to talk about that as we come back. But this is a way for him to take the lead again, to look effective by opposing these people who truly do hate our country. Before we get into that, though, I want to just cover some unusual bits and pieces of news. And we got everything from the Democrats moving to get the religious middle, as NPR says. We've got UFO fans signing over a million people saying they're going to crash Area 51. Let's take a look at some of these stories here. NPR said Democrats have the religious left. Can they win the religious middle? And when I saw this, I thought, wait a minute. Religious left. Isn't that an oxymoron? I mean, aren't these the people who, I mean, we're talking about the religious left. I'm thinking Marianne Williamson, that so-called author. That's the way they defined her. And she was such a non-entity in the debates, I didn't even do my proper due diligence to look at her. I mean, the night that I was covering the debates, we had four of the five top runners that were going to be debating each other. So we're basically focusing on what they were doing. Didn't really pay any attention to the most minor of the most minor players, like Marianne Williamson. But she is this, she's part of this Oprah occult crystal worshiping movement. self-love, hippy dippy. So that's the religious left. I don't know if that's if occultism and crystal readings are religion, then yeah, okay, you've got the religious left. But they go through this story here from NPR, and they said, you know, one of the things that cost Hillary Clinton the election was she only got one out of six evangelical voters. That's pretty low. That's like 17%. And so they said, so this year, you know, the problem was she never asked for their vote. Yes, we saw that. We saw the hatred and the contempt of Hillary Clinton for Christians in this country. And so now they're saying, can the Democrats this year, this coming election, 2020, can they make peace with the Christians that they've had such utter contempt for? Of course, NPR never suggests that maybe they might stop killing babies and demanding that we pay for it. That never crosses their mind. They don't really understand that part of the issue. But they mentioned two candidates and how these two candidates are doing an outreach to religious people in this country. And I thought it was amazing. They had Cory Booker. Now, I'm not aware of any Cory Booker God talk that he's involved in. But then they also mentioned Mayor Pete Buttigieg. I thought, are you kidding me? Buttigieg, this preeminent Marxist whose identity is LGBT, and he is making his LGBT identity, he's basically trying to put himself into a morally superior position to President Trump, bragging about his sexual immorality, making a virtue out of it. You know, quite frankly, and you look at what the LGBT are doing. I mean, they're trying to make the Bible hate speech. Is that how the Democrats do outreach to the Christians in the middle? I mean, I don't know where the middle is defined for these people. Maybe that's the people who aren't actively doing tarot card readings and crystal rubbings or whatever they do with the crystals. I don't know. I don't pay any attention to the occult. But I thought that was pretty amazing. It just shows what a deep hole they're in. And at the same time, as I said, they break their party, as you saw last week with AOC and Pelosi, they break their party into these different demographic groups. And these demographic groups are ultimately adamantly opposed to each other, diametrically opposed to each other. Take the LGBT, for example, and take the Muslims that they're trying to do outreach to both of these at the same time. You put those two together, that is an explosive mix. That is an inherent contradiction. Or you take even the LGBT group itself. The L's are now fighting with the T's, even within that group. The lesbians are angry because the transgender males are intruding into all these different areas like sports and so forth. And then you've got the pandering Democrat candidates of the debate like Julian Castro, who wants to grant government-paid abortions to the transgender females, in other words, the biological males. I mean, this is how deeply in trouble the Democrats are. And yet we have establishment polls telling us that Trump is losing. Don't believe it. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I got a couple more news items here about crazy religious cults. And I would include in that the UFO mania. But I also want to get into, before I get into this back and forth name calling in Washington, which is different, but it's not really anything new, right? We see this happening all the time. And it's the Babylon Bee got it right. At least when they're fighting with each other, they're not destroying our lives. Except that there is an active bureaucracy that is the true government that is still working to destroy our lives. But I want to talk about the articles that just broke this morning as well, right after this news here. Peter Thiel talking about how the FBI and the CIA should probe Google. Another writer, Robert Epstein, who is a psychiatrist who has studied Google, and you should study Google from the perspective of a psychiatrist. You should understand that the internet was originally proposed by a DARPA psychologist. It is a tool of psychological control. The internet itself is. It was designed that way. It was envisioned that way. It is being implemented that way by Google. And this psychologist has some very important suggestions on how we control this and roll this back. And that's a very, very important article. I want to spend some time on that before I get back into the infantile name-calling of the Democrat Party and the internal revolution. As Jonathan Turley pointed out in writing about what's going on this last week in the Democrat Party, how they're the revolution is getting out of control with Nancy Pelosi. She began the week by calling President Trump racist. He wants to make America white again. And by the end of the week, her own little revolutionaries were trying to cut her head off, just like the French Revolution. Robespierre was eventually went to the guillotine himself, right? And this is the way these things go. There is no end to it. Once you start this, maybe they should go back and read history. As Mark Twain said, it doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly does rhyme. And I can hear the rhyming right now, can't you? It's like a nursery rhyme. But I was just pointing out the ludicrous idea that NPR thought that candidates like Buttigieg were going to build bridges to the Christian community here in the United States, even though the main focus of his campaign, the open focus of his campaign. Look, this guy is a Marxist to the core. I pointed this out many times. His father, of course, and his mother, active Marxists, immigrating to the United States so they could teach us how to reorganize our society. So he was raised as a hardcore Marxist. He goes to Harvard. He studies under a professor. His mentor was a guy who took on the assumed first name of Sokvan. Sokvan. Where did he get that? Well, he combined that with Sacco and Vanzetti, the 20th century anarchists, the communists, who were executed for what they did, their violent acts. But they became heroes to the left, to the Marxists. And so Buttigieg's father is a Marxist, hardcore Marxist. He's got a little bit different spin on it. It's a hard sell after you kill hundreds of millions of people in the 20th century. Marxism became a hard sell. So Buttigieg's dad was right there with another spin on it to try to make it palpable. And then he sends his son off to Harvard so he can study under another Marxist professor who goes to Harvard. Remember, Harvard began as a Puritan seminary. And so what do they have now? Naturally, they have Sokvan as the mentor there, who is a Buttigieg. But his specialty is to deconstruct Puritanism, to use that to deconstruct American history. See, everything that is evil in American history, according to Buttigieg's professor, who was his supervisor there, everything that's evil in American history can be traced back to the evils of Christianity and Puritanism. Whether, you know, the Vietnam War, everything, right? So this is the environment in which this guy operates. That's why the first thing that he did as he began his campaign was to take on Christians. And this is the guy that NPR thinks is going to build bridges to Christians who only voted, one out of every six voted for Hillary Clinton, 17%. See, they don't even understand what our true objections were to Hillary Clinton. They don't understand the issue of life and death. They don't understand abortion. They don't understand the eradication of traditional marriage. They don't understand any of this stuff. And we see the hatred that these people have for the family, for America, for Christianity, as defined by the Bible, not as defined by the crystals of Marianne Williamson. That's not Christianity. And so when we look at this, USA Today is scratching their head. Again, Chick-fil-A, always the target of these people too, right? What business do they hate more than Chick-fil-A? As USA Today says, everybody's scratching their heads. Look at how much money they're losing. Well, we've gone through and we cranked the numbers. And by closing on Sundays, they're missing out on more than $1 billion in sale revenue every year. USA Today says Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, made the decision when he started the company back in 1946 that they would not be open on Sundays. He said the first day of the week should be for employees to have, quote, one day to rest and to worship if they choose. And they had a revenue of more than $10 billion in 2018. It's a 51st consecutive year of top-line growth. And so they started looking at this and saying, well, how much money are they losing? Because, they leapfrogged from seventh position to third position, right behind the virtue signaling needle sanctuary that we call Starbucks. I mean, they're knocking on number two's door, right? So they looked at number one, McDonald's. They said, well, McDonald's doesn't disclose its traffic day by day. But they said, people who look at this say that about 15% of their sales come on Sunday. The weekends are especially busy. So they went through and they did a projection. They said if Chick-fil-A has similar traffic patterns to McDonald's, and of course they would because they're both fast food restaurants, Sundays could bring in sales of at least $1.2 billion. But it's still family owned. And the family head, who is still there, says it's who we are. It's not about being closed. It's about how we use that time. See, they just don't understand the mindset of the Christians. And this is why Booty Gay isn't going to make any inroads into Christianity by beginning his campaign by hating Christians. But let's take a look at the new occult religion. Because as I saw this story here about the crowd of UFO fans, and again, it's not a real event, I don't think. I don't think people are really going to try to crash the gates of Area 51. Just in case, the Air Force spokesman said, we would discourage anyone from trying to come into the arena, into the area, because they'll probably shoot you. So I would not encourage anybody to try that either. But they have more than 1 million people saying that they're going to go. They're going to crash Area 51. They want to know what's being covered up. And I'm telling you, this is not about people wanting the government to stop covering up everything, because everything is now hidden from us. Your life is an open book. Your thoughts are an open book. The intelligence agencies that created the internet have been trying to figure out a way to read your mind since the 1950s, and now they have it with the internet, with Google, and we're going to talk about that. But, you look at this, and this is not really about trying to disclose government secrets. This is about a new, burgeoning occult religion. That's why this is so popular. We'll be right back.
Plant the seed in our home, and boys, let it grow where all can see. Feed it with our devotion, boys, call it the Liberty Tree. It's a tall
Liberty
tree.
It's your move. You're listening to the David Knight Show.
We are the sons of liberty. Save it from the storm, boys.
Welcome back. This morning, Drudge has a couple of links to comments people are making about Google, Peter Thiel, and also Robert Epstein. And I think it's very important to understand what they're saying. Peter Thiel, of course, one of the founders of PayPal, made a lot of money there, became and still is, I think, a Facebook board member, said last night that Google should be federally investigated for allegedly aiding the Chinese military. Thiel spoke at the National Conservatism Conference. He said, there's three questions that we shouldn't ask about Google. Here's the three questions, he said. Number one, how many foreign intelligence agencies have infiltrated your Manhattan Project for artificial intelligence? Number two, does Google's senior management consider itself to have been thoroughly infiltrated by Chinese intelligence? Number three, is it because they consider themselves to be so thoroughly infiltrated that they have engaged in the seemingly treasonous decision to work with the Chinese military and not with the U.S. military? Because they're making that sort of bad, short-term, rationalistic decision that if the technology doesn't go out the front door, it gets stolen out of the back door anyway. And, of course, this is what the Clintons did. The Clintons sold it out the front door for a while. And then I think what we saw with the Clinton email servers, I think they were selling it out the back door. And that was really what was going on with ClintonEmail.com. Yeah, come on in, ClintonEmail.com. I took all the most highly classified material that the U.S. government has. And, of course, we have sacrificed our Constitution and our Bill of Rights in every respect to on the altar of national security. We sacrifice everything to that false god. You know, give up your liberty, give up your human rights, and we'll make you secure. And so perhaps the nation has security. We as individuals don't, right? Because if you don't have any privacy and if you don't have any rights, you know, to the extent that you give that up, to that extent you become a slave. And so, yeah, we have sacrificed all that for the nation. And yet the nation doesn't have any security because you've got people like Hillary Clinton. For gain, or in the most charitable interpretation of this, it was gross stupidity and incompetence. But let's not pay any attention to that. Let's tie ourselves up chasing our tails for 2 years talking about Russia, Russia, Russia. Don't pay any attention to what Hillary Clinton did. Don't pay any attention to the information that came out of the DNC. Let's only talk about how we imagined that truthful information was turned over. And I say, whether it was WikiLeaks, and it was WikiLeaks who got that handed to them by a whistleblower. That's what they said. WikiLeaks, unlike the Democrats, unlike the New York Times, unlike the Washington Post, WikiLeaks has never lied to us. Unlike, I would say, also the FBI or the CIA or the Department of Justice. WikiLeaks is alone with all those institutions of having never lied to us. Julian Assange said that was turned over to us by a whistleblower. You had William Binney, global technical head of the NSA for decades, said we did our own tests, and I can prove to you that it wasn't hacked by a foreign power, just like Julian Assange said. I can prove it to you. If you don't believe him, and you prefer to believe the Washington establishment and the Democrats, I can prove to you, technically, that that never happened. But we still have officials in the White House, even President Trump himself, saying, yeah, yeah, the Russians hacked it. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. You don't have to. You don't have to keep carrying that lie, President Trump. It's not necessary. Just push back against that. And I hope he really doesn't believe that because he's had a briefing from William Binney. Nevertheless, whoever turned that information over about Hillary Clinton, regardless of who it was, even if it was the Russians, even if it was Putin, we should thank him for saving us from her. And the important thing is that we don't continue to go down that road. But the point that Peter Thiel is saying is that Google has been engaged in turning over information just like Hillary Clinton. And we've seen this. We've seen how they were setting up the Dragonfly project. Keep that secret. Don't tell anybody about it. But then we had whistleblowers inside Google that did tell us about that. Working to help the Chinese communists set up their great firewall to control information and to keep it from their people. Now that is being done to us, as we've been saying here for a very long time. What's going on in China is a beta test for what's happening here. And now we have these social media companies, the search companies, and of course Google is a search engine that has now been set up to hide information. Not to help you find it, but to keep it from you when you're searching for it. And that's what Robert Epstein is talking about. Robert Epstein, a psychiatrist who's written extensively about Google, he tweeted out yesterday, he said, talking about the manipulation of Google, he said, by the way, this kind of manipulation shows the absolute genius on the part of Google mind control technicians. It is a superb example of what I call SSE, the search suggestion effect. It's kind of like push polling. You know, when you want to get you want to move the population, you do a fake poll just before the election. And the purpose is not really to find out where people are. The purpose is really to move public opinion in your direction. And so you'll start making these phone calls under the pretense of it being a poll because people will not hang up on you if you're going to ask their opinion. Everybody wants to give their opinion, so they'll stay on the line. And then what you can do is you can ask questions in a way that slants the information to your to make your opponent look bad. That's what's called push polls. And so what Google is doing with the search suggestions, and he gives an example. He screenshots. He goes to Google and he types, Donald Trump is. And then you get these various suggestions. And the number five suggestion is, Donald Trump is a horse in a hospital. the number one is, Donald Trump is the president song. Donald Trump is my president Facebook. Donald Trump is what president? What number president? Donald Trump is Republican. Number five is, Donald Trump is a horse in a hospital. They can push anything if they want to. Now, Robert Epstein is savvy to what's going on here. As I said before, DARPA is where the concept of the internet was born. J.C.R. Licklider, back in the early 1960s, a psychologist who worked for DARPA. It is a weapon. The internet was always envisioned as a weapon in the information war. And, of course, he gave it its name, essentially. He called it the Intergalactic Computer Network. And then we shortened that up to the Internet. And as I've pointed out many times, once it became practical in the 1990s, you had DARPA, you had the CIA. CIA actually openly created an entire venture capital firm to fund people that they knew would be compliant with them, and then let those people fight it out for which one of them was going to win. Just like, you know, we have the approved list of candidates in both the Democrat and the Republican Party. And if you're not on that approved list, they come after you very quickly and take you out. You know, people like Tulsi Gabbard or people like Ron Paul or people like Donald Trump, they try to take you out. Donald Trump was able to break through, but that's not typically the case. Typically, what they have is a lot of pre-approved candidates. So you wind up in important election years, like when they want to get NAFTA through, you wind up with a Democrat and a Republican, Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush, both of who wanted NAFTA because it was time for NAFTA to go through. Or then in 2012, you wind up with Barack Obama, and they hedged their bets with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan because they were both hardcore supporting Obamacare. As a matter of fact, Mitt Romney had already done Obamacare. He did it with Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts. The two of them are very proud of that accomplishment. It was identical to Obamacare. So they control the elections. When we come back, we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what Robert Epstein said about breaking up Google's monopoly on search. And he's got a very, very important constructive idea that goes way beyond the kind of antitrust legislation that could drag on for a half of a century or more because of the amount of money that Google has to fund a lawsuit. There is no limit to the amount of time that they could tie you up in the courts. I don't see antitrust working. But he's got a suggestion for how we break it. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll talk about that. Welcome back to Break Google's Monopoly on Search. Make its index public, writes Robert Epstein, a psychiatrist. And what he writes on Bloomberg, linked by the Drudge Report this morning, recognition, he said, is growing worldwide that something big needs to be done about big tech and fast. More than $8 billion in fines have been levied against Google by the European Union since 2017. Facebook is also facing an onslaught of investigations. Former employees of both companies, Google and Facebook, have warned that these companies are ripping apart the social fabric, quote unquote, and can hijack the mind. And I'm telling you, this is what they were designed to do. This is what the internet was designed to do, quite frankly. Adding substance to the concerns, documents and videos have been leaking from big tech companies supporting fears most often expressed by conservatives about political manipulations and even aspirations to engineer human values. Well, of course, we can see this. This is no longer a theory. Now, he's laying this out there as if, these are allegations. Look, folks, these are proven facts. We got the confessions on video. Fixes on the table, he said, include forcing the tech titans to divest themselves of some of the companies that they've bought. Google has bought more than 250. Go back to, again, another DARPA competition. you know, DARPA said, well, we want an internet, you know, so a psychologist there, so that we can, you know, watch what people are thinking, so that we can then push what people are thinking. Yeah, it's not enough to have Operation Mockingbird, where you've got control of the broadcast media, and you've got all the three major broadcast companies and the big newspapers all reading the same script provided for them by the intelligence community. I mean, you can come up with something better, right? You really want to know, is this working? And the internet provides both of those now, with control of the narrative being increasingly taken over by these corporations who say, well, we have determined that you are fake, you are hateful, you will not be allowed. These other people, on the other hand, these establishment corporate media companies, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, they are going to be not only allowed, but promoted on our news service. Microsoft will have their service called NewsGuard, and they'll put a mark next to your name. Say, you can trust these guys. These guys you can't trust. We will determine for you what is trustworthy and what isn't. So you listen to us. And then those same people, Microsoft, also has DARPA funding Microsoft and a little shell corporation whose only investor is DARPA. You know, they pretend that it's not DARPA, but it's always DARPA behind the scenes here. DARPA has is working now, not only on NewsGuard, but also on ElectionGuard. They're setting up an operating system to count the votes. And there again, there's the PRISM slide that was leaked by Ed Snowden. And you can see that Microsoft was the very first corporation to jump into PRISM in order to get the metadata, to understand, not only to be able to push the information on you in a monopoly type of situation, but then also to be able to measure the public's response to this, to see if the propaganda is working. They want to close that feedback loop there so they can understand how effective it is and tweak that narrative if necessary. It is all a psychological tool of control. You want to have authority figures, just like the Milgram experiment, you know, where they told people, authority figures said, you know, ramp up the electricity of this person. Oh, they're in pain. That's okay. Keep going. Oh, you just killed them. You know, that type of thing, right? Reproduced in a French television show. It works. 2/3 of the population will follow an authority figure to kill somebody if instructed to do so. They also found that 3/4 of the people in the Ash experiment, 3/4 of the people will go along with the crowd. That's the other important aspect of social media. You know, not only have authoritative news sources, but you have a crowd of people on social media. And again, just like the experiment, it's not necessarily, these people are lying to you. You know, you got something here that is very, very obvious. That was the Ash experiment. Now, here's 3 different lines. Tell us which one is the shortest line. Well, anybody could determine that. It was a very obvious. It was designed to be very obvious. But they put them in a crowd of people, and everybody in the crowd, except for the one person who was a test subject, they were all in on the gag, and they would all give the wrong answer. And after a while, about 75% of the people would go along with the crowd and give the answer that was obviously wrong. That is what this is all about. It's been designed this way. And so we look at the fixes that are on the table. Again, you know, he talks about the 250 companies acquired by Google. DARPA not only put the idea for the internet out there, DARPA gave us our first self-driving car competition, because the self-driving car, that's a DARPA idea. That's a tool of control. If you want to, you want to control a population, the military knows this. You want to dominate your opponent. You control the way they shoot. You control their communication, and you control their movement. And that is a part. We know that they're after our First Amendment. We know they're after the Second Amendment. There is no amendment that expressly pushes back on any government control of our transportation. Doesn't matter, because they don't pay attention to the First or Second Amendment either. The Ninth and Tenth Amendment make it clear that they don't have that power to do it. But, of course, they're going to do that, and they feel no compunction to try to pretend that it's not the government directly doing it when it comes to our transportation. They do have to use these corporations to try to pretend that they're not directly violating the First Amendment for now. They'll get more open on that. But again, these 250 companies that are bought up by Google, every time there's a successful artificial intelligence company, they buy them. The DARPA competition on robotics, every one of those companies that showed even the slightest bit of promise, DARPA, it was bought by Google in that DARPA competition. These and a dozen other proposals in terms of forcing them to divest themselves of some of these companies, this is the antitrust idea, never get to the heart of the problem, says Robert Epstein. And that is the Google search engine and Facebook's social network platform have value only if they are intact. And so he has a proposal for how to get rid of that. He says, if you leave them intact, then what they're doing is, of course, we're winding up with aggressive surveillance. We're getting the suppression of content. We're getting the subtle manipulation of thinking and behavior of more than 2.5 billion people, far more, quite frankly. I mean, that's just Facebook alone. Google has an even bigger reach. It's one of the reasons why George Gilder has focused on Google as being the worst of the tech companies in terms of its reach and in terms of what it's the threat to free speech and free society. He wrote a book called Life After Google. I hope he's right. That they're going to come up with different, we'll have different constructs that come out. Because I don't think the government is going to do anything about it. Politicians can easily be bought off. And these companies have a tremendous amount of money. And so he says, so let's focus on Google, says Bob Epstein. He says, I've been studying it for more than 6 years through both experimental research and monitoring projects. And, of course, he's a psychologist. Google is well aware of my work and not happy with me. They would not talk to him for comment. He said, Google is especially worrisome because it's maintained an unopposed monopoly on search worldwide for nearly a decade. It has 92% of the searches. The next largest competitor, Microsoft's Bing, only gets 2.5%. So they have 92%. The number two competitor has 2.5%. Is that a monopoly? Do we need to be worried about that? He said, there's a simple way to end this. And he says, you turn it into an index. And you have it set out there so that it's you level the playing field by making this available for free for people who want to do it on a small scale. But you have, if you've got a big scale user, of course, they can charge a fee to maintain that index. But you regulate it like a utility. We'll talk more about this when we come back. We got to go to commercial break, and I want to remind you of the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Because as we have Google and the largest corporations the world has ever seen all collude all at once to shut down InfoWars, to personally depersonalize Alex Jones and so forth, this is the only way that we stay here. And, of course, you've been very loyal to support us. You've been a sponsor of ours. And the victories that we've had in these elections, the victories that we've had in terms of educating the public about what these systems of control are really due to you. And so we want to make this a win-win situation. We've got a 1776 worldwide special that we have continued from last week's 34-hour broadcast. It's still in effect. We have many products available for $17.76. We have BrainForce Plus Ultra 12. That's our vitamin B12 formula. Survival Shield X2 and X3 nascent iodines. Our Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel that has nano silver. Very, very effective. It's what they still use in hospitals. For serious burn patients, they still use Silver Salve. Now you can get that yourself. Ultimate Bone Broth, Winter Sun Plus, our vitamin D formula. All shirts, hats, including the new Betsy Ross 1776 designs, all $17.76. Up to 75% off store-wide, at least 10% off everything in the store. InfoWarsStore.com. We'll be right back.
Analyzing the globalist's next move. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Let's, in this segment, analyze our next possible move against the globalists, specifically against Google. As I was pointing out, Robert Epstein, a psychologist, has been studying them for quite some time, and that's reasonable. It's going to be psychologists to give us insight into the internet, into Google, because they are tools of psychological control. And as he pointed out, they've got 92%, Google has 92% of all the searches worldwide. The next largest competitor, the number two, only gets 2.5%. That's Microsoft's Bing. So are they a monopoly? You bet they are a monopoly. And so, again, what he's talking about is regulating them like a public utility. This has also come up in terms of pushbacks against Facebook offering a cryptocurrency. Reuters has reported on a proposal from the Democrats in the House that would basically push back on Facebook's intention to create Libra, that is the cryptocurrency. And I've been reporting on this for quite some time. I reported before it was officially announced how dangerous this is for the American dollar, among other things. Look, the Federal Reserve is private. We understand that. And as bad as they are, creating a global currency under the control of Facebook, under the control of Mark Zuckerberg, would be even worse. I mean, to get rid of the Federal Reserve and to jump into a global currency created by Facebook, one of the things I pointed out and drew your attention to in the last couple of weeks was a single paragraph there, just a couple of sentences inside their white paper defining what Libra was going to do. And they were very proud of the fact that they were going to attempt to create a global ID. Now, the danger of all this, even though Trump is tweeting last week about how this is evil, he doesn't want the cryptocurrency and so forth. Like we can't give up our control with the Federal Reserve that we currently have. The hegemony of the American dollar, the petrodollar that was created with the Saudis. And I don't know if we've got the hegemony or they've got the hegemony with us. Got the heebie-jeebies. Take a look at what's going on with the control of our currency by the Saudis. But when you look at this, Trump is opposed to it, he says in a tweet. The Democrats are now saying they are opposed to it. They've actually put together in their legislation, they've got a proposed bill that would levy a fine of $1 million per day against Facebook if they set up a cryptocurrency. And this is something that we need to support both the House Democrats and President Trump on, because the Republicans in the Senate are not on board with this. And it's not a surprise, because we saw at the social media conference at the White House, who was there? Well, you had people who were real alternative media people. Some of them, like Ben Gerson, were purged by the shills in the White House. I said, no, you can't come. You did a cartoon that showed Soros controlling politicians. Oh, that's anti-Semitic. No, it's true. It's true. The connection of Soros, the connection of other big bankers, that is not anti-Semitic any more than it was anti-Semitic for President Trump to say that Gary Cohen, his appointee from Goldman Sachs, was a globalist. Yeah, we know that Goldman Sachs and Gary Cohen are globalists. And Cohen didn't have any problem with that. But they tried to portray that as anti-Semitic as well. There's the cartoon. So he was purged. You know who was there, however? The Heritage Foundation. Folks, you have to understand that big business Republicans, a lot of conservatives, a lot of libertarians who are pushing back against any control of Google and Facebook are bought and sold by them. Biggest contributor, one of the biggest contributors to the Heritage Foundation is Google. You think they're going to call for anything to be done to Google? Oh, they're going to say, no, in the name of competition and a free market, we need to leave them alone. Same thing is true of the Cato Institute, Reason, many of these libertarian organizations. Controlled by Koch brother money, and they don't want to have any regulation of the big tech companies. They want to control them.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're going to get into the back and forth. Trump made some great points, and of course, he was obviously called racist. But they've been calling each other racist all week. You know, the radicals, as Nancy Pelosi called them, the squad, they came back and said, you're targeting women of color. You're racist, sexist, Nancy Pelosi. And so you've had this open fight. We're going to talk about the open warfare going on in the Democrat Party. Rahm Emanuel has jumped in on the side of Nancy Pelosi and condemning them as well. But, of course, when President Trump says anything, he, of course, is racist. Racist. Everybody is racist. If you criticize them, you're racist. So we're going to do a racist segment because we're going to criticize them. Coming up, we'll tell you what President Trump said, and we'll get into criticism of these people. And again, I'll be painted as a racist for saying that, but so be it. I still want to finish up, though, however, with what's going on with these vast control structures that go beyond the back-and-forth name-calling that's always going to be a part of Washington. These control structures have been decades in the making. And as we have people like Robert Epstein pointing out how we need to roll these back, there are some moves that are being done because, remember, the bankers still have a lot of control in the United States. None of them signed on to Facebook's Libra coin, the cryptocurrency. No banks. You got MasterCard, you got PayPal, you got Uber. A lot of major corporations went in and bought these $10,000 each, $10 million each nodes. You got to pony up. If you want to play this game of Monopoly, you got to have a big stake here to get in on the game, right? To get a seat at the table in this poker game. And so a lot of these, the world's biggest corporations are now supporting this. And so I find this to be very interesting. These people who have paid up $10 million to get in on this, to try to create a global currency, they have a lot of money to lobby, well, let's just say to buy congressmen and senators. They got a lot of money to buy them. They got a lot of lawyers. And they also have something else that's on the table. They can promise the government that they can do a better job of spying on you than the banks can. You know, that's been a big part of the banking system, a big part of the IRS as well, right, from the get-go. Well, we have to know everything about everybody because we need to be able to collect taxes from them. But that's not the only reason they were getting the information. They could have collected more taxes and done it more anonymously with a value-added tax where there is a tax every time it changes hands in the manufacturing and distribution and retailing and so forth. Every time it changes hands, there's a tax in the VAT. And it's kind of hidden from the people. They don't realize how much tax they're paying. You know, when you fill out your tax forms, you see that bottom line number there, and you see that big tax bill. You know, they try to hide it as much as they can by forcing everybody to have it withdrawn from their paycheck because nobody's going to be able to write a check at the end of the year to do that. And if you did that, that would really wake the public up pretty quickly. So they put in the withholding tax, and they put in a lot of penalties if you under withhold and so forth. They don't want you to see it, but at the same time, it's a lot more visible than any other way that they could have taxed you. And they do that because they wanted details about your life. Now, they've gotten a lot more sophisticated, and they may get away from the income tax if they can get all that information elsewhere. They've put in the Bank Secrecy Act, you know, which is about having the bank violate your privacy. that's the way they title these things, having the bank notify the government whenever you put money in or take money out over a certain level, and that level of withdrawals and deposits is getting smaller and smaller because they want to know more and more about you. But nobody can offer them that information like Facebook can, and that's really their trump card. That, along with the massive amounts of money that they have and these big corporations that are going to be partnering with them. They have a very limited number of these nodes, unlike other cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. With Bitcoin, anybody can go in and become a Bitcoin miner and process transactions and everything. No, they're going to restrict it for Libra coin to a very few number of nodes that are available to people if they got $10 million or more to pony up with. And they've already got a lot of corporate sponsors. So I can see this is going to turn into a big lobbying war. But what we have at the moment is we have the Democratic majority in the House Financial Services Committee. As Reuters reports, they said, well, we've seen a copy of the draft legislation. And they said the bill proposes a fine of $1 million per day for violating rules that would prohibit things like Libra's digital coin. It's a sweeping proposal, they said, that would likely spark opposition from Republican members of the House who are keen on innovation. And they don't think the Republicans in the Senate are going to go for it either. So even though President Trump has been heaping scorn on Facebook's attempt to set up a global currency, and the Democrats are as well, you got a lot of Republicans who say, oh, we don't want any regulation of them setting up a global currency any more than we want any regulation of Facebook and Google setting up a global control network of free speech, which is no longer free. And they said in this, the draft legislation is titled, Keep Big Tech out of finance, the Keep Big Tech Out of Finance Act. It describes a large technology firm as any company that is mainly offering an online platform service that has at least $25 billion in annual revenue. A large platform utility, says the bill. A large platform, hear that word, utility? A large platform utility may not establish, maintain, or operate a digital asset that is intended to be widely used as a medium of exchange, a unit of account, a store of any value, or any other similar function as defined by the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. So this is a bill written by and for the banks, Federal Reserve, saying, look, we already have a deal going with this private organization, the Federal Reserve, and we're not going to let you guys come in and go around that deal. But also interesting is the fact that they refer to it as a utility. It's a large online platform service, a platform utility, at least $25 billion in annual revenue. And quite frankly, I don't want to see Facebook or Google or any of these companies jumping into money as well. In a sense, it's kind of like the Glass-Steagall Act being repealed. You know, Glass-Steagall was put in after we had the crash and the depression, the 1920s and 30s. They said, look, we're going to have a banking industry here. We're going to limit how much they can speculate. We're going to provide federal deposit insurance, but we're going to, you know, in order to make them solvent, to have an insurance there so they're not going to crash and take the economy down with it. But as part of that insurance that we're going to offer them and that assurance that's given to the public that this is a stable system, we're going to put certain restrictions on them to keep them from gambling with your money. Now, they removed those during the Clinton administration. They also removed any concern about banks getting too consolidated and too monopolistic under the Clinton administration. I remember very clearly when that happened. In North Carolina, they took the biggest bank, Nations Bank, and they allowed it to merge with the massive bank, Bank of America. Those two coming together, everybody said, you can't allow that. That's going to trigger a wave of mergers in the banking industry that's going to create, you know, five or six or less too big to fail banks. And that's exactly what it did. By removing, during the Clinton administration, by removing the Glass-Steagall Act, they allowed these people to get into collateralizing loans and so forth, which created the speculative aspect. They allowed the banks to consolidate by approving those mergers and allowing that to go on. And it didn't take but about a decade for the whole thing to collapse and blow up in our faces. And so, yeah, this is, you could kind of think of this as a Glass-Steagall Act. But will it go through? As they're pointing out, President Trump last week said that Facebook and these other big Silicon companies want to, quote, become a bank. And his comments came after the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell, told lawmakers that Facebook's plan to build a digital currency could not move forward unless it addressed concerns over privacy, money laundering, consumer protection, and financial stability. So again, they don't want a competition of that. But when we come back, I want to say just a little bit more about Robert Epstein's proposal of how to tackle this monopolistic control of the Internet that Google has and Facebook. And remember, when we come back, a utility. It is a utility. They have said so. They call themselves, they say their business model is to set up a digital public square. I believe them. You should too. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Joining us in the next segment will be Ben Garrison, the great political cartoonist. I love the cartoons that Ben does. I love talking to Ben. I had a chance to interview him when he was here in the studio. So we're going to talk to him about the social media conference that he was invited to and then disinvited after he had some people at CNN throw a fit. You're going to let Ben Garrison on? I mean, he does political commentary and cartoons, political cartoons, right? We can't have somebody like that because they don't have any sense of humor and they don't like political criticism and they don't have any answer for Ben Garrison. So they got him purged. The White House staff caved on that. And so we're going to talk about that in this segment as a lead up to that. I want to talk about Robert Epstein's solution that he sees for how we handle this monopoly that is now there. And of course, it is a monopoly. They are a public utility. They have said their business model is the digital public square. You had Jack Dorsey at Twitter say that 8 times. You've had Facebook say that as well. But Epstein is pointing to Google, for example. He said, again, the simplest way to break their monopoly without breaking them up would be to turn their index, which is the core of their business model, to make that available to a lot of different companies. Now, they, as utility, they could get paid for maintaining that, but we would control certain aspects of it. Here's his proposal. First of all, he says, this is also, there's a precedent for this, both in law and in Google's business practices. When private ownership of essential resources and services, things like water, electricity, telecommunications, so on, when they no longer serve the public interest, government often steps in to control them. And I just read for you the new bill that is circulating through the Democrat House, talking about how they would not allow Facebook to have a currency to go into competition with the Federal Reserve's monopoly. They would fine them up to $1 million a day. But they talk about them being a public utility. Yes, they are a public utility. They are the digital public square as well. We've had Supreme Court decisions. 1946, Marsh versus Alabama. A company-owned town that threw a Jehovah's Witness out of the public square. And they said, even if that public square is privately owned, you can't shut down free speech. Now, some people say, well, yeah, but since then we've had the Supreme Court say that malls can throw people out. The mall is not a public square. A bakery that makes custom cakes is not a public square. You know, these lawsuits by the LGBT against the baker in Colorado and others shutting their businesses down, the Supreme Court said, well, you can't do that. We've had people like Gary Johnson when he was running for president in this in 2016. He sided on the side of the people who were coming in, trying to shut down, deliberately picking on a Christian and saying, make us a custom cake, celebrating homosexual marriage. He says, well, I can't do that. I'll sell you anything that I've got here off the shelf. You want a pre-made cake? You want some cookies? Or I'll sell you that. I'm not going to custom bake a cake that violates my religious freedom. Now, Gary Johnson said, well, you know, you can't allow monopolies to decide who they're going to give electricity to, right? We don't allow that. Well, that baker didn't have a monopoly on cakes. They were coming after him to make a point to shut him down. So you will worship what we choose to do sexually or we will shut you down. That was the whole point of that. He was completely off base, and so was the majority of the Libertarian Party in supporting that. But what is going on with the internet companies, they really do have a digital public square. They really do have a monopoly. They really are utility companies. And now people are starting to talk about that. And they said, actually, in terms of their business practices, they already do what Robert Epstein is talking about doing. They already do that with StartPage. And if you don't know what StartPage is, StartPage, basically you get exactly the same searches that you would with Google, except the difference is that StartPage doesn't track you. So Google still makes the money off of ads that they put on StartPage. But StartPage acts as a buffer between you and Google, so Google doesn't track your privacy. Now, as Robert Epstein points out, some people want privacy. Other people want customized results. They want their information to be taken by Google, so Google can make suggestions to them as to what they would like to see or what they would like to buy and so forth. So those people could be free to use Google. The people who want their privacy, who value that more, would be able to use something like StartPage. So Google is already doing what he proposes. He says, if you had other entities were given unlimited access to Google's index, then you could have dozens of variants of StartPage that would just pop up within months. Each of them would have a special focus. Each of them would have a special emphasis. Each would be drawing on a different set of subsets of information from Google's ever-expanding index. It would allow people to have choice, and it would effectively break up this monopoly. And then he has some other, so you look at this and you say, well, okay, still, however, if they're going to create the index, they could also inject their bias into that as well. And so he says, so different things that you would have to regulate with this would be access to it. You'd make sure that everybody has access to that interface. You'd have to make sure that Google is not throttling the access speed for some companies in reference to others or to themselves. You'd have to make sure that content is not manipulated by Google. You have to make sure that everything is equally visible. You have to make sure that Google cannot remove anything. This is the key thing. When we look at Josh Hawley and the certain things that he's proposing out there, the problem I have with Josh Hawley's legislation, which basically says that the government would audit social media companies for bias, to me, that is a non-starter. Because now you're going to have the government out there deciding what's true and what isn't. The government's in both America, the European Union, and elsewhere, and China, are there telling these social media companies, you must censor what I tell you to censor, and you must do it in a time certain. And I'm going to keep shortening up that space there. I want you to take down what I tell you to take down. I want you to remove what I tell you to remove. And, of course, that is an open invitation for them to go ahead and extend that to reflect the biases of the people who run Google and who run Facebook. And what we should be doing, if we want a free and open society, we should be prohibiting the removal of content. It's very simple. You don't say, I want certain things to be removed. You just say, you will not remove anything. We put the same kind of restrictions on them that the First Amendment puts on the federal government. Because the First Amendment does not grant us freedom of speech. It doesn't grant us the free exercise of religion. It recognizes those, as the Declaration of Independence said, it recognizes those as God-given rights. Rights come from God. They come as a result of us being human. They're human rights. And so as a human, we possess these things already. And so the Bill of Rights is a prohibition of government taking away our human rights and turning them into government-granted privileges. First Amendment is not about the government granting us free speech. It's about stopping them from taking away the rights that we already have, our humanity. And that's what they need to do. That's the tack that they need to do. If you're going to have a media, you're going to start auditing social media companies for bias, you're going to get back to the fairness doctrine that basically was broken by Ronald Reagan. That was the rise of talk radio once we had it. But you could basically use a fairness doctrine to control political speech. That's the downfall. We've already seen that implemented. I mean, are these people going to be like, we should call this the Diogenes Bill. You're going to have some government auditors searching for truth. We'll be right back with Ben Garrison. He's got some truth to lay on you. We'll be right back.
Analyzing the globalist's next move. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Ben Garrison. Ben was in the news quite a bit last week, even more so than usual, because Ben is always in the news. He is a great political cartoonist. I would say he is the best that we've got right now in terms of traditional political cartoons. He has a libertarian perspective on things, has his origins in politics with the Ron Paul movement. And he was in the news this last week because with the social media conference that was conducted at the White House, he was disinvited at the last minute when you had people at CNN and elsewhere do a social justice whining movement about how racist Ben was because of a single cartoon that showed George Soros pulling the strings of bankers in Washington, D.C. And as I pointed out earlier in the program, we've had the same type of thing said about President Trump when he when Gary Cohen was leaving, he was kind of joking and said, yeah, he's kind of a globalist because Gary Cohen from Goldman Sachs had been fighting President Trump on tariffs. President Trump wanted to equalize tariffs between the U.S. and China. Said, well, you know, you can either take your tariffs down to the level that we charge or we'll take ours up to the level that you charge. And we can both go to zero if you want to do that. Gary Cohen didn't want to do that. He wanted to leave the unequal tariffs 10-1 in favor of China. And in protest, he was resigning. And of course, being Jewish and a banker, if you say he's a globalist, that's obviously racism, and it's not. And yet the White House disinvited Ben Garrison. And so, Ben, thank you for joining us. I want to ask you, just respond to those charges of racism. You heard my comments there. What else do you want to add to that?
Well, I don't see how. Well, first of all, when you're talking about the Jewish religion, I mean, that's not a race. It's like saying you're racist because you're, you know, an Islamophobe. Well, you know, being anti-Muslim is not necessarily make you a racist, because that comprises all kinds of races. That doesn't make any sense. Although the Huffington Post in their story said I was an outspoken racist, and of course, without citing any evidence or proof whatsoever.
Take a look at what the New York Times did. You know, when they drew, you had Bibi Netanyahu, and you had President Trump with a yarmulke, and they had Netanyahu with a stereotypical nose. You know, that they would you would see in anti-Semitism in Nazi. They didn't get on them nearly as bad as they did you. But you were talking about specific individuals, and it is a fact that George Soros and other people. Individuals have exercised their political, their financial power to push certain political aspects. That's not being, that's not attacking a religion or a race when you point that out. Yeah, there's that cartoon.
But it
that's not yours. That's the New York Times. That is an explicitly racist cartoon. Yours was not.
Well, you know, this thing about George Soros, there's a thing on the left now where you cannot criticize him, because what they'll say, at least with my cartoons, they always use the same word over and over. It's a dog whistle. It's a dog whistle for anti-Semitism. Well,
except they put Netanyahu there as a dog. The Star of David around his neck, right? Was that a dog whistle? Yeah, I think it was.
But regarding that, somebody asked me in an interview about that cartoon, and I said, well, I don't agree with it, but, you know, the time to decide whether or not that should be published is, and you know, they should have decided that. Once it's published, then they have to stand by the what they did, because an editorial cartoon is going to make somebody happy or angry. That would make a lot of people angry. Mm-hmm. But as a result, not only did they apologize, they also banned editorial cartooning from their newspaper.
Yeah, because you can't have a caricature. A caricature, which is what political cartoons are all about. A caricature is going to hurt somebody's feelings.
Exactly. So that they're just hastening their own slide into their own inky grave when they start limiting the kind of content that people want to see in a newspaper. So,
and that's what they've done to comedians. They've said, you know, somebody's going to be offended if you do a joke, right? You can't do a joke based on broad stereotypes or whatever, women or this or that, or men, you know, men are like this or whatever, or rednecks. You know, you might be a redneck if you, well, you can't do any of that stuff because you're going to hurt somebody's feelings. So basically, they're just killing comedians just like they're killing political cartoons.
Right. Well, but the only thing you can make fun of these days are either Nazis or Southern white men.
Yeah. I think you can still do the redneck jokes. But that's fair game. That's fair game. So, you know, we look at this and again, last week, as this was all happening, you know, you're banned supposedly for a racism because you drew a political cartoon about George Soros. Right. And yet that same week, you've got Nancy Pelosi calling President Trump a racist, and then later in the week, you've got her own political party, the radicals on that political party, calling her a racist and a sexist, saying that she's targeting women of color. I mean, this is a revolution that is just eating itself, isn't it?
It's just, with the left, it's all nothing but name-calling now. You can't debate anybody, and you can't even... just trying to refute them ends up being this... kind of like this exercise in futility. Look, that cartoon I drew, I mean, it's not racist they were accusing me of as being anti-Semitic, because you're not allowed to mention Soros, and you're especially not allowed to mention the Rothschilds. But I told several people, I said, look, if I were really anti-Semitic, I would have labeled it Jews, not Rothschilds. You're not allowed to criticize the R family in particular. But, I mean... Why is everybody?
And it's no secret that Emmanuel Macron, you know, came from the Rothschild banking industry. You know, just like we had Gary Cohen coming from Goldman Sachs and so forth. I mean, there's still a political power.
This family, I mean, they'll say, "Well, they've fallen on hard times. They're all poor now." Don't stop picking on the poor. But you remember that they also were having these weird eyes wide shut kind of parties with these masks and these demonic symbols. No. Can't go there. Can't go there. You can't criticize them because then you're anti-Semitic. I don't criticize people for their race or religion. I criticize them for what they do.
Yes.
Now, but I got you know, it was like they played the ain't it awful gotcha game. Then people like our nemesis, Jake Tapper, really went hard to try to do to make sure that I got disinvited. And actually, I was very disappointed. I got censored from the censorship concert. It's like, <"Whoa." laughs>
that's a great claim. I was censored from the censorship conference. Well, and of course, the people who were there, the Heritage Foundation, I mean, there were some good people who have been censored. But of course, you know, Alex Jones was censored from the censorship conference, right? They didn't want to talk to him, just like you had Marco Rubio didn't want to talk to Alex. You know, they're going to have a conference talking about the political control of the social media giants, and yet they don't invite Alex at all when he was just That's had ridiculous. The most public deplatforming at all.
If I were president, Alex Jones would have been the very first man to invite. I mean, that's just ridiculous, because he's like the best example of what they're trying to do to us all. They're trying to deplatform, unperson us all, so we don't even have a voice. They'll say, well, you still have your freedom of speech. Yeah, but where can we use it? I mean, we're going to go outside and yell at a rain cloud. That's about it. Or staple up a cartoon to a pine tree. I mean, if we don't have any access, how else are we going to utilize our First Amendment?
It's not enough for them to deplatform you. They're going to deperson you, and then they're going to tell people, well, you can still talk about them as long as you criticize them, as long as you put out violent threats against them or death threats. I mean, basically, we had Facebook do a fatwa on Alex Jones and on Paul Joseph Watson and many other individuals, Laura Loomer and others.
We all have to be demonized, too. We all have, because they want to show a lesson. This is what happens when you step out of our well-constructed channel of political correctness. And if you challenge it, you know, you're going to be brutally beat down. So where do we go from here? I mean, I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to have to make them kick me off. I mean, our site went down after I went out to D.C. because we were under a hack attack. And I don't expect that to slow down. I expect them to kind of ramp up, and eventually I'll be kicked off and depersoned just like Alex Jones has. And so,
that's right. This is an existential issue for the United States, because this is a massive tool of population control. The first casualty of war is always free speech and a free press. And folks, if you don't understand, we're at war. We are in an information war, and it is well underway. We're going to be right back. We'll talk to Ben Garrison, and I want to talk to Ben about the new social media bank. He's always talked about the Federal Reserve. Let's talk about the real bank that's coming, the Facebook bank. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking to Ben Garrison. Before we get back to Ben, I just want to tell you a little bit about our 1776 Worldwide Special that is at InfoWarsStore.com. Folks, you are our only sponsor, and we try to make this as win-win as we can. You have supported us over the years. Everything that we do here at InfoWars is because of your support, and we want to try to help you as well. So we've got some new designs for T-shirts. We've got the Bessie Ross 1776 shirt. We've got four different styles. It's a limited run. The price of that is $17.76, all of those designs. And we have many other products that are priced at $17.76, which is up to 75% off throughout the store and at least 10% off everything. Here's some of the products that are at $17.76. We have BrainForce Plus, $17.76. We have Ultra 12, our vitamin B12 supplement. Again, you don't have to get an injection. You can get the same effect with the Ultra 12 Vitamin B12, our Survival Shield X2 and X3 Nascent Iodine products, $17.76. Our Super Silver, that's Nano Silver, Wound Dressing Gel, Ultimate Bone Broth Winter Sun Plus, that's our Vitamin D supplement, all those, $17.76, and many, many other products you'll find at InfoWarsStore.com. Also, as we go back to Ben Garrison, I'll give you his Twitter handle as well as his website. His website is grrrgraphics.com. That's like graphics. grrrgraphics.com. His Twitter handle is the same, grrrgraphics. And, of course, you can also find me on Twitter, Libertarian. And I have a YouTube channel back now again, Libertarian. So that's youtube.com/Libertarian. I'm still about 58,000 subscribers short of where I was when they pulled the channel in a knee-jerk reaction to InfoWars. No reason was ever given. No explanation was ever given. No strikes had ever been received. Even strikes that were put on and removed, I never had any of that against the YouTube channel. It just pulled it. No explanation, no communication. I got thousands of nagging emails saying that a complaint had been received, but not specific about what that was. So anyway, we're still 58,000 subscribers short. 58,000 people haven't found me that had subscribed before. So again, don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, share that. Also the Twitter channel, Libertarian, follow and retweet from there. All right, let's go back to Ben Garrison. You know, Ben, you were taken out by the personal attacks at CNN, Jake Tapper and others that came after you. And the people at the White House staff caved to that. Some of the people that were there, for example, however, we had Mark Dicey, obviously understands the censorship issue. He hasn't been deplatformed or depersoned, and I'm glad that he hasn't. But he understands the issue. Heritage Foundation, on the other hand, Heritage Foundation, one of their biggest donors is Google. And the people with the Heritage Foundation that were allowed to go to that social media conference, people like Robert Bluey, Bridget Wagner, Maria Souza, Jessica Anderson, they sent a whole entourage there. And they had this to say. Anderson said this in a statement. She said, while there was a discussion about breaking up big tech and penalties for perceived censorship or bias, it is clear the free market is working as more conservatives voice their concerns. So they don't see any need for regulation. We see this from many of the libertarian think tanks that are funded by the Koch brothers and others. They say, leave them alone. We don't want the government stepping in and doing anything. They won fair and square. They own the internet. Let's let them have it. What's your response to that?
Well, it's not perceived. It's not perceived censorship. It's blatant.
Yeah, exactly. They don't even admit it. They say, well, it's perceived censorship. That's their statement. Yeah.
But they use that word blatant. It was just funny because the ADL has been attacking me for quite a while. They said I was a blatant anti-Semite. Okay, so all the media arms everywhere use that word blatant, 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 blatant. But you know what they're doing in Silicon Valley is pretty darn blatant. Look what they did to what they did to you. Look what they did to James Woods. I mean, and the list is endless. You know, they just it's blatant censorship. So,
but you have the White House chief of staff allowing people in here who are conservatives and libertarians who are downplaying this situation. They don't allow Alex Jones to come in and talk about this, who has suffered this more than anybody else, who was the first one to hit it. They pretend that he doesn't exist. Are you very optimistic that anything is going to be done?
Well, it's going to require something more fundamental than even trying to break up these people or suing them. And what I wanted to relay to the president, and I never got a chance, is I wanted to try to get him associated with a man named Shiva Iron Durai, who has been on InfoWars before. Mm-hmm. And I thought his idea of resurrecting the post office and guaranteeing all Americans a so-called, you know, a handle of some sort, and develop a platform there, a Twitter, Facebook-like component, so nobody gets censored. Now, if you go back to the revolutionary days, how did they communicate? I mean, they didn't have internet, radio, or anything like or telephones. It was all done by the post office.
They had committees of correspondence, yeah.
So, you know, they sent letters and newsletters to each other, and that's how they corresponded, right? And that could be made anew again. And I think, you know, I wasn't going to try to give him a long harangue about what Shiva said. I wanted Shiva to go there too. I want Shiva to meet the president and tell him this idea because it was just a brilliant. Shiva's a brilliant man. I mean, he invented email, and you know, he ran against Elizabeth Warren and lost, of course, because of the big machine in Massachusetts. But that was going to be what I was going to say to the president. I said, you need to talk to Shiva, but I never got that chance. And I never got a chance to give him my proof. We got a couple of proof copies of our coffee table book, which is coming out in August. And I wanted to give him the very first one, you know, give it to the president. I never got the chance.
So people can find that at your website, Ben, your coffee table book?
It's going to be a rare book, only 1,000 copies. And they're all sold, every single one, and pre-sold. I was like, gosh, you know. Regardless, I was going to give it to the president. I ended up giving it to Carpe Donctum, who invited me to the after party. I said, you know what? You didn't disinvite me to this party, so I'm going to give you the book I was going to give the president. And he was delighted to get it.
Well, you know, one of the things, we're almost out of time. We only got about 3 minutes left. One of the things that you focused on in the early days, with pro Ron Paul cartoons and so forth. You were also very anti Federal Reserve, and you understand the threat that that poses to our society and our freedoms. But another interesting thing has come, and I think that this is, you know, as we are, we got people like the Heritage Foundation saying, well, there's not any real problem here with Facebook and so forth. They are moving forward in competition even to the Federal Reserve to set up a global currency that they will control that will also have as a component of that a global ID. Now, we've had the both President Trump has attacked Facebook, so they shouldn't be allowed to do a currency. You've had Democrats doing that. But now we've got Republicans who are saying, well, we need to let them do this and move forward. What do you think about this idea that Mark Zuckerberg should set up a global ID and a global currency?
It's extremely dangerous. You know, I mentioned about an ID for the post office, but this is a different thing, because if you attach that to money, then once you're on a cashless system, then they can start penalizing you. Look at the Facebook. What's going to happen if people get too deeply in this? I forgot what they called it, Libra coin or something. But if you step out of line online, out of their lines, then you're going to start getting penalized. Well, that's going to cost you, this many coins. And so what this is trying to do is,
or they might just kick you out of the, they might stop you from being able to do any kind of economic activity, just like they've been responsible for deplatforming Alex and putting a fatwa against him, you know, say, hey, yeah, you can make death threats against this guy.
It's going on in China with the social credit system. People want, well, I want my credit score to be higher, my social credit. So they don't step out of line and they report people. You know, this is what they want in America. These authoritarian control freak tyrants. No, thank you.
Man. Yeah, that's why it is so amazing to see that, you know, there isn't a clear understanding of even the current threat that they pose. And now they're moving to the next level.
Well, yeah. So, no, I'm, you know, anything, say no to the Zucker coin. Boy, that's that's going into really dangerous territory.
And the cryptocurrency for Zuckers. There's a Zucker born every minute.
Bitcoin is one thing because, you know, people wanted to escape the debt money system. And so that's what was the attraction to Bitcoin. And now they want to usurp the Bitcoin, and then they want to rechannel it as this, a social media coin. And then it's going to end up, you know, the banks do. They like cryptocurrency. They like having digital currency. They like having. They don't want a cashless society. They want to be able to track you, tax you, yes, and shut you down if they need to. That's right.
And they're all coming up. You know, all these people like Jamie Dimon, who trashed Bitcoin. Well, you know, he's got his own cryptocurrency. And so these other banks, all these control tactics that they're putting out there. Thank you so much for joining us. Ben Garrison, again, you can find him at grrrgraphics.com. Same handle at Twitter. Thank you so much, Ben.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Analyzing the globalists' next move. It's the David Knight Show.
All right, we're beginning our third hour, and I said at the top of the program I was going to talk about the racism, finger-pointing, going in every direction. I mean, it's always been going from the Democrats to anybody else that they disagree with. You take down your opponent by accusing them of racism. They're now silenced. They're now defined as a hateful, dangerous person. You can purge them from the Internet, all social media, and of course they have nothing to say because you've labeled them as racist. And now they've been doing it this last week. They did that to Ben Garrison. The guest that I was just talking to got him out of the social media conference because the White House staff caved to that criticism. Couldn't stand the heat. That's not a good sign, folks, when they can't stand the heat and they cave to that kind of criticism, that kind of shallow criticism from the Democrat press and CNN and so forth. It's pathetic to see that caving. It tells me when they cave to that, when they bring in the Heritage Foundation, who gets their largest contributor is Google, And they say, well, there's no problem. It's just a perceived thing. And the free market's going to take care of it. See, we got people here. Look at this. We've got a conference. It's done, right? We got a, you know, they're a think tank. And so you get a group of people here to talk about a problem, and it's solved in their mind, right? There's an awareness of a perception. And so since you have an awareness of a perception, not a real problem, just a perception of a problem. Oh, well, it's taken care of. Don't worry about it. Pay no attention. Go back to sleep, everybody. There's nothing to see here. Move on. Well, as they were trying to call Ben Garrison a racist, then they started calling each other racist because that's exactly where this is going to go. So let's take a look at what President Trump did. But before we get to that, real quickly, I just want to point out the fact that we've got the ranking Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Michael McCaul, out of here in Texas, spent yesterday condemning the $733 billion National Defense Authorization Act. It was dangerous and reckless, so it must be banned, right? Why? Why does he call it dangerous and reckless? Well, because it's got a couple of provisions in it that would sunset this authorization for the use of military force. That has given legal it's muddied the water. I wouldn't even say that it gives legal authorization because, again, the people look at this authorization for the use of military force and say, well, this is to go after the forces that were involved in 9/11. But they've used it as a blank check to have unending war anywhere without any declaration by the president, certainly not by the Congress, which is what's required under the Constitution. And so the idea that this would be taken down, he calls that very dangerous. He said it would illegalize the war on terror. It would make illegal a war on a tactic. It might actually stop the endless wars that we have. And now there's going to be a fight in the Senate because there's a different version in the House and the Senate. The Senate doesn't want to get rid of this perpetual war. And whenever they talk about this, remember, they always muddy the water by saying, well, the president needs to be able to react to things pretty quickly here. That's a very different thing than having a protracted 20-year war in Afghanistan that isn't going anywhere. And we still had another person killed in that war this last weekend. And they've lost the majority of territory there. They're now trying to move around the failed Vietnam village strategy, as Rand Paul called it. Oh, well, if we just take another village, maybe we'll be able to get to the peace negotiations and have a little bit more strength. No, the Taliban knows that you're losing. It's not any secret. They know that. Everybody knows that. Americans know it. Afghans know it. The Taliban knows it. Taking another village isn't really going to help you in this. There is no military solution there, Rand Paul said. All the generals will tell him that. And so why are we still there? Well, we'll see about this. But there is a difference between the actual waging of a war, which is to be done by the executive under the Constitution, and a declaration of war. Because a declaration of war, you lay out why we're fighting this war. What does it look like when we're finished? Were we attacked first? The principles of just war. One of those other things that came from our Christian foundation that we have jettisoned. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I want to get into the racism wars. Now we have a racism civil war within the Democrats, as well as one that is going on with President Trump. Do not criticize anybody, right? They can criticize you as much as they wish, but if you respond in kind, you will be censored. You will be declared a hateful person. You will be deplatformed, depersoned. They will put a fatwa out on you, like Facebook and Zuckerberg did. You know, a death sentence. That's exactly what that is. And so now, you know, as President Trump said to the Sisterhood of Traveling Burkas, or as Nancy Pelosi calls them, the squad, as he told them, I want to go back to these places that you came from. They need your help. People come back and say, well, only one of these four was not born in America. But here's the issue, folks. They all identify more strongly with some other country, some other culture than they do with America. They make a big deal out of it, as AOC did about it. I had to basically go back and look at it. It's like, really? She's not Puerto Rican? That's all I hear, is how Puerto Rican she is. I don't ever hear AOC talking about America, except to criticize it, right? She talks in glowing terms about her Puerto Rican background, her heritage, her Puerto Rican identity, and this and that, right? Rashida Tlaib, we'll have the clip for you, just to remind you. When she won the election, which is when she won the primary, it was a gerrymandered district, and we'll talk about that as well. When she won that gerrymandered district, which is a Democrat district, you remember that they were wrapping her in the Palestinian flag, not the American flag. They were ululating there. You know, she's talking about, oh, all of my relatives back in Palestine, they're going to be so happy. We got our first Palestinian congresswoman. Yeah. Oh, but she was born in America. So, you know, pay no attention to that, right? President Trump is wrong? Is he? Really? You think he is? But let's talk about the court system here. Because, you know, when I talked last week, and I had actually the thumbnail, Julian did a great job putting it together for me. I said, you know, show President Trump in a straitjacket, because that's basically where the judiciary has him right now. We have, for the last 100 or so years, we have created some other kind of government that bears no relationship whatsoever to the Constitution. You had in the Constitution three equal branches in the federal government. You had in the Constitution differences of power between the central federal government and the state governments and the people and so forth. And that was by design. And the design was that of all of those, the federal government would be weaker than the states, weaker than the people. And they had assumed that even within the federal government and those different co-equal branches of the federal government, that the weakest one of those would be the judiciary. And yet, what have we seen? We have seen the federal government, which is supposed to be weaker than the states, exercise its authority over everything in the states. You can have referenda throughout the various states to say we want traditional marriage, one man, one woman. Even in California, the radical factions lost the election in California. You have in various states, it was in the Constitution. It was already encoded in law. And all of this was overturned, not just by the federal government, which has no authority to overturn that, but it was overturned by the Supreme Court. And everybody bowed down to that. The president bowed down to it. Of course, he wanted it. You know, Obama wanted that. Congress bowed down to it. All these different state governors and legislators bowed down to it. The only person in politics at any level that I've seen respond to the Constitution is Roy Moore. Roy Moore said, we have a Constitution in Alabama. We already have defined what marriage is. And that's not your prerogative to do that. There is nothing in the Constitution that gives you that power. And the Ninth and Tenth Amendment says if you don't specifically have something delegated to you, you don't have the authority to do that. And so now we've got the FDA out there telling us that all drugs are prohibited unless they expressly permit it. Now they're extending their authority to shut down using your own cells. Because if you take out fat cells, you put them in a centrifuge and you separate out the fat from the stem cells, they wrongfully claim that that is now a drug and they have authority over that. They've never regulated anything like that before. They've never regulated hair transplants and so forth. You know, somebody's doing hair transplants or plastic surgery. That's regulated by the state, by the local area to make sure that somebody's got a clean clinic. But now the administrative state is expanding its unconstitutional authority. So if President Trump wants to get anything done, he's going to have to go back to the Constitution. He's going to have to go back and act like Andrew Jackson and say they've issued their opinion. Let's see them enforce it. Because the border wall fight, as being reported by the Daily Caller, and this headline is wrong. The border wall fight just got to the Supreme Court. No, the judiciary has been stopping President Trump at every juncture, every juncture. And if he doesn't stop bowing down and kowtowing to them, and it's not only him, every president has done this for the last 100 years. And the most effective thing that President Trump could do, as I've said before, you know, talk about the census question. It's really a question of authority. You're going to tell us, and even Roberts, who voted with the majority, the 5-4 majority, the liberals and Roberts, and of course I'm being redundant here, Roberts is now an out-of-the-closet status liberal. Those five said that just 2 days before they issued the statement on the census question, they said, we're not going to have the courts review what the administrative state says, the bureaucracies and so forth. No. They can do whatever they want. We're not going to micromanage them or second-guess them. Then 2 days later, they said, but we are going to micromanage and second-guess the census. And even though, said Roberts, even though they can ask any question they want, we can tell them, we want to look at your motivations. And we can imagine what your motivation. This is the same thing that is happening now with the Democrat Party, happening with all these people calling President Trump racist because he pushed back against these people who obviously hate America. But it's a very effective, it's a good thing actually for President Trump. And I think the genius of this was that as he looked very weak and vacillating to the Supreme Court, he comes on strong by criticizing these people who obviously hate America and Americans. The squad, or as I call them, the sisterhood of the traveling burkas. And so that was a win for him. Nobody is talking about the census question anymore, except me, I guess. I think it is still a big question. And I think it is an important question of authority. And if President Trump was going to heap scorn on anybody or any institution, what he should have done is he should have heaped scorn on the judiciary. They're the ones who need to be criticized. They're the ones who need to have their wings clipped because they are now controlling everything that he does. U.S. District Judge Haywood Gilliam forbade the administration from using $2.5 billion in military funds for border wall construction. See, they don't want to have any limitation at all on what they can do under the authorization for the use of military force. You know, we can just pretend that it's about terrorism and we can use it for regime change in Libya. We can use it for regime change in Syria and so forth. We don't care. But even though we have violent drug cartels coming across the border at will, even though ISIS has said, yeah, we're shipping terrorists in across the border and there's nothing you can or will do to stop it, we can't do anything under the authorization for the use of military force to protect the borders. We can't do anything under the Constitution to protect the borders. It is clearly the prerogative of the federal government and of the executive branch to protect our borders. And yet you've got judges saying, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. I don't like that. So you can't do it. Political judges, political appointees, unaccountable, unelected, telling us we can't do what's under the Constitution. And it continues on. This decision prevents the Department of Defense from taking steps to support the Department of Homeland Security that the acting Secretary of Defense determined to be necessary in the national interest. But that's okay because, you know, they're the judiciary. They are the Supreme Politburo of America. Anything that they decide, these five people decide, we all have to bow down. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Yes, the racism charges were flying fast and furious last week. It had Ben Carson on. Of course, he was called a racist. Nancy Pelosi called Trump a racist. Then AOC called Nancy Pelosi a racist. Then everybody said that President Trump is a racist. I guess everybody is racist. You know, if you still support President Trump, you are a racist, according to Ilhan Omar. And that's more than 50% of America. So, to say that she hates America, oh, that's a stretch, right? We saw on Saturday, she doubled down after the argument she had back and forth with Tucker Carlson. She wants Tucker removed because, you know, anybody that they disagree with, that's their tactic. You're racist. Now you have to leave. Fatwa on you, okay? So she put out a fatwa on Tucker Carlson. And, of course, that also includes violence. That's what Antifa wants to do to Tucker Carlson and his family. But let's just play what Tucker Carlson had earlier said about Ilhan Omar. Video clip number one.
Isn't disappointed in America She's enraged by it. Virtually every public statement she makes accuses Americans of bigotry and racism. This is an immoral country, she says. She has undisguised contempt for the United States and for its people. That should worry you, and not just because Omar is now a sitting member of Congress. Ilhan Omar is living proof that the way we practice immigration has become dangerous to this country. A system designed to strengthen America is instead undermining it. Some of the very people we try hardest to help have come to hate us passionately. Maybe that's our fault for asking too little of our immigrants. We aren't self-confident enough to make them assimilate so they never feel fully American. Or maybe the problem is deeper than that. Maybe we're importing people from places whose values are simply antithetical to ours. Who knows what the problem is? But there is a problem. And whatever the cause, this cannot continue. It's not sustainable. No country can import large numbers of people who hate it and expect to survive. The Romans were the last to try that, with predictable results. So be grateful for Ilhan Omar, annoying as she is. She's a living fire alarm, a warning to the rest of us that we better change our immigration system immediately, or else.
All right, he's absolutely right. I agree with every word he had to say there. And, of course, that makes him a racist, right? Because he doesn't agree with Ilhan Omar and her visceral hatred of America. And then she doubled down on Saturday. She questioned all Americans. You know, she loves America more than any of the rest of us here. Those people who are born here in America, she loves America better than us. Actually, what she loves is an idea of what she wants to turn America into. She doesn't like America as it is. The America that was a free country that used to be about the rule of law. An America that gave her refuge when the country that she was fleeing was involved in civil war. And coming after women, by the way, that culture. So the safe haven that accepted her, legally accepted her, she didn't have to crash the border. She was let in. And as she has said before, she said last fall, you know, I came to America. They just didn't treat us that. We were more poor in the refugee camps that we came into in America when they brought us in than we were over there. I seriously doubt that that's the truth. But she said, yeah, my father said, don't worry, they're going to take care of us. You're not in America yet. Well, here's the news to Ilhan Omar and her Somalian family. Your daddy is the one who is supposed to take care of you, not the American people. I am not your daddy. We'll give you an opportunity to escape the refugee status there and the hatred there, unless you're a Christian, of course. If you're a Christian, you're on your own, like Asia Bibi. We didn't do anything to help her. The Trump administration didn't do anything to help Asia Bibi. Just let her try to hide from the Pakistanis, the Muslims who wanted to kill her because she had the audacity to drink from the same water fountain that Muslim women were drinking from. She served 9 years on death row. And when she got out, they set the country on fire, demanding that she be killed. They killed a legislator who said, you know, we need to get rid of this death penalty for blasphemy. And so they killed him. Those are the countries that she thinks are morally superior to the United States. And so I agree with President Trump. Go back where you came from. Show them you have such a great idea of how to fix this country. You don't need to come here. Go back and fix the places that you came from because they need you a lot more than we need you here. If you haven't noticed, Somalia was and still is in much worse shape than America. So if she wants to do good, go back there and help them first. But on Saturday, she said, I probably love this country more than anyone who is naturally born in the United States. Something I get criticized for all the time. It's not what you think, so don't gasp. It's that I'm anti-American because I criticize the United States. Yeah, we noticed that. She has a visceral hatred of our culture, of our law, of our people, of our Constitution, of our religion, you name it. She hates everything about America. She said, I believe as an immigrant, I probably love this country more than anyone naturally born because I'm ashamed of it continuing to live in its hypocrisy. Yeah, she said when she was brought here as a refugee, given a lot of free stuff, but it wasn't enough. She said a promise not kept. Oh, we were told America is going to be great. It was a promise not kept. So President Trump comes out and he says, so sad to see Democrats sticking up for people who speak so badly of our country and who, in addition, hate Israel with a true and unbridled passion. And it's true. You know, you look at how much they love their country. Now, I'm mentioning this because of Rashida Tlaib. Does she hate Israel? Oh, yes, with a passion. Does she love Palestine more than she does America? I don't care if she's born here or not. She considers herself to be a Palestinian American. Remember when she got the nomination to become the Democrat president, which is essentially winning the election? This is how that played out. Let's remind everybody what this looked like when she won. This is Rashida Tlaib, the Palestinian, the first Palestinian American Congress member. Here she is. There they are. Okay. This lady is American, of course. Just in case you don't know.
You can't tell. You know, as I uplift the families of the 13th Congressional District, I'll uplift them every single day being who I am as a proud Palestinian American and woman.
Yes!
Yeah, I think the American part is an afterthought. I want to just tell you who I am as a proud Palestinian. And then she goes on to talk about how all of her relatives, all of her aunts and uncles, still in Palestine. They're so happy. You know, finally we got representation in Congress. Look, I don't think the Congress ought to be controlled by people who put another country ahead of America. And that includes Israeli lobby as well. I mean, if they're going to put Israel's interest ahead of America's interest, I'm not interested. I'm not going there. Same with this woman. Put Palestine's interest ahead of ours. Yeah, they're putting that ahead. And as they point, you know, oh, well, you know, the only one of the squad, Nancy Pelosi's squad, that actually hails from outside the United States was Ilhan Omar, who was born in Somalia. I don't know. I think that Rashida Tlaib qualifies for that. I think when you look at Ocasio-Cortez, she talks all the time about how she's Puerto Rican this and Puerto Rican that. She defines herself as being Puerto Rican, not so much American. She doesn't really like America. She kept telling everybody, I'm Puerto Rican, I'm Puerto Rican. I had to go back and look at, you know, her biography. Yes, she was born in the Bronx. She doesn't ever say, I'm Bronx, I'm a New Yorker, I'm an American. No, she's a Puerto Rican. She says, we are black, we're indigenous, we're Spanish. Is she American? Well, yeah, technically, I guess. We'll be right back.
David Knight Show.
Isn't that what AOC did in New York? Tax the rich, feed the poor, till there's no rich no more, because they're getting out. They're running away. You can either... eventually you run out of other people's money, or you run the people with money out of your jurisdiction, which is what they're doing in New York. But let's take a look at AOC's latest racist charges. Not against President Trump, of course, but against Nancy Pelosi. And as Jonathan Turley pointed out, he compared it to the French Revolution. Exactly right. As he said, it shows that Pelosi is at risk of being devoured by the revolution that she began. And, of course, that she was stoking earlier in the week when she called President Trump racist, as Turley points out, throwing Molotov sound bites at President Trump, including an allegation that what he really wants to do is to make America white again. Well, by the end of the week, she was being called a racist. And it is very much like what happened in the French Revolution. As one journalist quotes, says, the revolution devours its own children. Yeah, exactly. Remember Robespierre? Okay, he wound up the guy who was putting everybody on the guillotine. As the revolution kept grinding on, it did devour its own children. It devoured him. He lost his head on the guillotine eventually, right? And that's maybe an apt analogy to what's going on in the Democrat Party. He points out, you know, they've always used identity politics to balkanize the voter base and to use that to their advantage. It's just, as I pointed out earlier, you know, the racism that they use to get power, that racism is now just taken on a different complexion. It used to be about white supremacy. Now it's about white inferiority. You know, and they want to have women of color. They are the ones that are going to have supremacy over everybody. And because they have been fueling that revolution, it is now coming back on them. And as even Wall Street Journal is saying, the feud among House Democrats remains on public display, continued to flare over the weekend. So even as these people are fighting President Trump, they're fighting Nancy Pelosi, too. Isn't that amazing? Both Trump and Pelosi are getting the same charges of racism against them by the radical factions of the Democrat Socialist Revolution. Now, of course, they'll pull it back and say, well, I really didn't mean it when I said she was singling out women of color. I didn't really mean to call her a sexist and a racist. They do, bow to at least that much decorum for now. But as the Wall Street Journal points out, despite efforts by Nancy Pelosi to keep discord between Democratic leadership and more progressive members private, it was public through the weekend. Here's an example. Rahm Emanuel called AOC's chief of staff, Chakrabarty, a snot-nosed punk. he's right about that. In June, Chakrabarty compared moderate Democrats to Southern racists, and now Rahm Emanuel is calling him a snot-nosed punk. But of course, we should believe them when they criticize President Trump. Yeah, this is the French Revolution that has now come to the Democrat Party. In a since-deleted tweet, Chakrabarty called Charisse Davids a racist. And then on Sunday, Rahm Emanuel unloaded on Chakrabarty in a New York Times column by Maureen Dowd. She reports, Rahm Emanuel told me Chakrabarty is, quote, a snot-nosed punk, unquote, who has no idea about the battle scars that Pelosi bears from the liberal fights she has led. What votes did you get, said Rahm Emanuel, talking about Chakrabarty, rhetorically challenging AOC's chief of staff. He said, you should only be so lucky as to learn from somebody like Nancy, who has shown incredible courage and who has twice returned the Democrat Party to power. Ah, but that's where they are, isn't it? And just remember, last week, we also had Chakrabarty. These people don't know enough to hide their agenda or to keep their mouth shut. Chakrabarty, her chief of staff, said last week, he said, look, you may think that the Green New Deal was about climate change. It's not. It's about a radical restructuring of society. Oh, these rare moments of being candid. I hope that the FEC is looking at Chakrabarty and AOC. Running a political action committee, a PAC, a political PAC is supposed to be kept separate from the candidate. And yet, in her case, these people who know so much, they had both the candidate and her chief of staff as the controllers of the PAC. And I got to say, Nancy Pelosi could file something with the FEC just as easily as President Trump could. Nancy Pelosi would probably like to see the FEC initiate action against AOC and her campaign manager, Chakrabarty, even more so than President Trump. But then the AP comes in and says, leave the U.S., Trump tells liberal congresswomen of color, and they start out their report at the Associated Press with this. Starkly injecting race into his criticism of liberal Democrats, President Trump said on Sunday, four congresswomen of color should go back to the, quote, broken and crime-infested countries they came from. Now, did he starkly inject race? Didn't Nancy Pelosi starkly inject racism earlier in the week in criticizing not only President Trump but his supporters? Didn't they say that it was Nancy Pelosi who criticized four congresswomen of color? And now they're saying, oh, no, forget about Nancy Pelosi supposedly targeting them for persecution, according to AOC. No. It was President Trump who did that, they said. They said Democrats labeled the remarks racist and breathtakingly divisive. Oh, of course they would. They're Democrats, right? Everything is racist and divisive to them. Let's play video clip number three, because Brian Stelter has no trouble saying this is starkly injecting racism into the narrative as well. Here's Brian Stelter.
This is one of the president's most recent tweets. Straight up racist. Talking about progressive congresswomen. Let's read part of it here. He says, it's so interesting to see Democratic congresswomen, we'll put it back up in a sec, who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, now loudly, viciously telling the people of the United States how to run the government. Here's the key part. Why don't
George
they go
Costanza
back
is upset.
and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? Now, He's probably talking about Representative Ilhan Omar, who was born in Somalia, who fled to Kenya and then came to the United States when she was 12
years old.
Yeah,
we know Somalia doesn't have any problems.
There are other Democratic congresswomen who she is associated with, who she is friendly with, all of whom were born in the United States. But the president's talking about Democratic congresswomen who need to go back to where they're from.
He's just speaking.
It's 2019. We're 2.5 years in the Trump presidency.
And CNN, and here we are, after all this time of CNN.
Becoming more obvious?
Yeah, I think you're pretty obvious.
More frightening?
It's just so amazing to him. You know, here he is. CNN is collapsing, and President Trump has something to say about it. Go ahead. I'll stop talking over.
To where you came from. They've heard those words on the schoolyard, behind their backs at work.
They've heard it on CNN over and over again.
That Americans have been fighting against for decades. Is coming from the president's Twitter feed. There's no bigger story in the country right now.
No bigger story.
And I want to relate this to the media by pointing out that the ground has been softened for this stuff from the president by this collection of pro-Trump bloggers, radio hosts, television stars.
Oh, see, it's all us. It's
somehow
us.
Think
and
it's acceptable to attack fellow Americans like this.
Yes. And, you know, they would never do that. I mean, Ilhan Omar would never call all Trump supporters racist, except she did. She doubled down and did that. And it's not just CNN. You know, it's not just Brian Stelter. It's all of CNN. Trump's most openly racist rhetoric yet is not at all surprising, they say. Doesn't he understand what e pluribus unum means? Well, do they? It didn't mean that e pluribus unum meant that we're taking all these different sovereign states and we're creating one government that we're going to keep some control over. No. They don't understand that's what it means. And then, of course, you got Justin Amash, who wants to be the leader of the anti-Trump faction. He's going to have to fight Romney for that. But, you know, he's being applauded by mainstream media because he comes out and says it's racist and it's disgusting, of course. And I think their side is disgusting as how they have now made racism completely, completely meaningless. We'll be right back. Yeah, you know, when we look at what happened last week, let's keep this all in context, as I said. You know, we had Ben Garrison. Because he criticized George Soros. Well, he is criticizing all Jewish people. No, he's criticizing George Soros. Who, by the way, even though George Soros is Jewish, maybe he is anti-Semitic. After all, he did work as a Nazi collaborator. But, of course, we can't mention that. You know, you can't criticize George Soros. So if you do, you're anti-Semitic, right? And then you had Nancy Pelosi saying President Trump and his supporters want to make America white again. Then the Democrats turned on her, called her racist and sexist, and still did over the weekend. Rahm Emanuel saying that calling these people out who criticized Nancy Pelosi. Chakra Bharti, AOC's chief of staff, calling other moderate Democrats racist and so forth. So it's not just Nancy Pelosi, it's all of them. And then also last week, we had Ilhan Omar, who told 400 high school students how unjust America is. It's worse than where she came from, Somalia. She said, I grew up in an extremely unjust society. I was excited to come to the United States. It was supposed to be a country that guaranteed justice to all. No, actually, what she was talking about to them was free stuff for everybody, because that's her complaint. She complained to the Washington Post and said, well, you know, I was black, I was Muslim, they didn't treat me as well, they didn't give me enough stuff. And my dad said, oh, don't worry, they'll give us more stuff later. And then she told a story that she had later admitted to the Washington Post. Nah, the details aren't exactly right. I might have fabricated part of that as well. About a woman who had a starving 5-year-old granddaughter. She stole some bread and everything. The Washington Post even said, oh, this sounds like the plot to Les Mis. Perhaps what happened was when Omar was brought over from Somalia, probably they took her to the movies or to a Broadway play. I don't know if they had it as a Broadway play then or not. They probably took her to the movies and she saw that story. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's it. Anyway, she later admitted, even they said, like, this sounds like Les Mis. It's probably embellished. She admitted to the Post that she could have flubbed the fact. She said, well, I'm not really sure. The details might not all match, but that's what I remember. And that's the only thing that's important. Remember Elizabeth Warren? She couldn't reproduce the results in her DNA test, but she still stood by it. She said, no, what I remember is I was Indian. I was American Indian. And we got this story, you know. We had, back in my family, had Little White Dove, and she got together with the brave Running Bear, and Little White Dove and Running Bear, and then I happened along a few generations. That's what I remember, and I'm standing by it because I remember that. You know, it doesn't matter. Just like Beto O'Rourke saying, well, I'm identifying as Hispanic, and so therefore I am. Maybe this is why, as InfoWars reports, internal Democrat poll shows that only 9% of swing voters have a favorable view of Ilhan Omar. They said Ocasio-Cortez is recognized by 74% of voters, but only 22% of them liked her. So 3/4 of the voters like her, but only 1/3 of those who know who she is like her. Know who she is, but only 1/3 of them like her. Even worse for Ilhan Omar. They said slightly more than half of the people know her, but only 9% of them like her. Same thing with socialism that they're selling. You know, this whole version of Les Mis that they're selling with everybody. And then she doubles down over the weekend, and she retweets a story from Wajahat Ali, I think is the way you pronounce his name. The story was, of course, on the Daily Beast. Trump is a racist, and if you still support him, so are you. And so she tweeted that out. She agrees with that. Maybe you could just say you're a racist and you also are deplorable, because that worked out so well for Hillary Clinton in the last election. She just called more than 50% of the people, because President Trump has got a more than 50% approval rating. So Ilhan Omar and the Daily Beast just said that more than 50% of America is racist. And in that article, the Daily Beast article, it says, the president is a racist in his words and in his actions. Well, so they don't have to prove that. They just assert it, right? And then if you disagree with them, you're racist too. Before you go clutching your pearls and extolling the virtues of civility. No, we'd extol the virtues of free speech. But she says, before you extol the virtues of civility, let me just say this. Put a sock in it. Because that's what they say to anybody who talks back to them, who asks them for proof. You know, because we are no longer in a society where people even argue about something, right? Everybody's got their own truth. We're in postmodern society. Folks, if you want to understand what's going on with this, it all goes back to our education system, K through 12, and especially college. I see people wringing their hands all at, what's happened to our kids? I don't, you know, they're socialists. This new generation is socialist. They have rejected God. They've rejected America. They've rejected the Constitution. What do you think? It's what we've been training them to do. We surrender our kids to the state, and they turn them into the socialist mob, and we wonder, what's going on with this? You think I'm joking about this? Look at this. California is the first state to offer health benefits to all adult undocumented immigrants. These are not people like Ilhan Omar that we welcomed in and said, okay, yeah, there's a civil war there. We're going to give you some sanctuary here. No, these are people who crashed the system. And they're going to give health benefits to them. They give them superior benefits to American citizens. Tom Steyer, a billionaire who wants to be president. Well, you can his campaign is over. He says, yes, I would provide health insurance for foreign citizens criminally trespassing, otherwise known as illegal immigrants. So forget about Tom Steyer. In just 1 month, right now, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, it's not the Defense Department that is spending $1 billion per month. I'm sorry, $100 billion per month. Think about that. $100 billion per month. It's not the Defense Department. It's the welfare state, Health and Human Services. And yet these people all want to tell anybody anywhere in the world, come on in. You don't have to get processed. No limits to the number of people who come in here. As a matter of fact, if you're sick, oh, that's even better. You got a serious disease? Oh, yeah, come on in and you can crash the healthcare system as well. No limit to anything. We're not going to screen anybody for disease. That was never the situation at Ellis Island. All these people talk about that. But just every month, $100 billion being spent already on Medicare and Medicaid, and these Democrats want to open the floodgates. As one expert says, it's going to bring in the people who have the most serious diseases. Let's play for you, however, what the genius who is now the front runner in the Democrat Party, Joe Biden, had to say about the border. Let's play video clip number 6.
No country, even one as powerful as ours, can go it alone in the challenges of the 21st century. I respect no borders and cannot be contained by any walls.
Yeah.
As president, I will do more than just restore the historic partnerships. I'll lead an effort to reimagine them.
Yeah, he respects no borders. We'll have no walls. And, of course, they're going to make sure that happens with the judiciary. If President Trump doesn't stop this attitude that we have to bow to everything the judiciary tells us, and I, as I said on Friday, the way you do this, President Trump, is you come at them on the big pharmaceutical industry, because this doesn't divide the country politically. Everybody understands we got price gouging going on with the pharmaceuticals. And if you come back against your own administrative state and the judiciary there and say, no, we are going to have the prices put there for the big pharmaceutical companies, if they can demand that you list all the adverse side effects, then you can also put the regulation on them to say that they got to say what the price is. And yet a judge, a politically connected judge, shuts that down. That's the point at which you shut down the judiciary. And if you did that, America would applaud. You would set up a new standard that would go back to the Constitution. All right, we're nearly out of time here, folks. Thank you so much for listening. And I just want to tell you before we go that the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com are what keep this program on the air. And we have a great special that we've continued from last week from our 34-hour broadcast special, our 1776 special that we have, many products available for $17.76. Those are discounts up to 75% off store-wide, at least 10% off of everything in the store. So go to InfoWarsStore.com. You'll see things at $17.76 like Brain Force Plus, Ultra 12, our B12 formula, Survival Shield X2 and Survival Shield X3 Nascent Iodine, our Super Silver, that's our Nano Silver Wound Dressing Gel, Ultimate Bone Broth, Winter Sun, our Vitamin D Plus supplement, all of those and many, many others, including all shirts and hats, all at $17.76. InfoWarsStore.com. Thank you again for listening.